Running a business is hard enough. Don't make it harder with a dozen apps that don't talk to each other. One for sales, another for inventory, a separate one for accounting. That's software overload. Odoo is the all-in-one platform that replaces them all. CRM, accounting, inventory, e-commerce, HR. Fully integrated, easy to use, and built to grow with your business. Thousands have already made the switch. Why not you? Try Odoo for free at odoo.com. That's odoo.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And before I get into this week's guest, I want to once again turn people's attention to my website. There's a lot of stuff going on there. Number one, I am en route right now going to Mount Everest. I'm so pumped up about that. You can check out more details there at www.markpattisonnfl.com. On there, there is a button called Follow the Journey, Go Figure, and you can actually see how a Garmin interactive map is tracking me going up and down the mountain, which I'll have to do multiple times. We'll get more into that later today. So check it out, okay? Number one. Number two is there is a button, another one called Philanthropy. I've been engaged with a company called Higher Ground. They're an amazing organization here in Sun Valley, LA, and New York. We partner with them. My daughter has epilepsy. We've come together to form a campaign called Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. And the goal was originally to raise $27,940 to match the height of Lhotse, which I will be attempting in addition to Everest. And we've actually gone past $50,000 with donations, many kind souls, including the Raiders and the NFL, of which they have a social grant program. I'm very fired up. And also, please go on. There's so many podcasts, over 198 now, of amazing podcasts, of incredible people doing amazing, awesome things. And you can see where all the pods are. And I'd greatly, greatly appreciate referring a friend or go in and give the show a ratings and review. It helps to elevate the popularity of the show. I don't care about being popular, but the show is meant to inspire others. I need to be inspired too. So go check that out and give the show a ratings and review. Okay. On that note, let's jump into it. Today's guest is a longtime friend, a great ally. And as I find myself en route to Mount Everest, I wanted to go back and talk to my buddy, John Wechter, who actually became the 58th person to climb Mount Everest, I believe. We will get into that. It might even be the Seven Summits, but he did that as well. So first of all, John Wechter, how you doing?
I'm doing good, MP. Doing well. Thanks for having me on. I love your podcast, so it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. I know we tried to connect and you know, with the impending departure, I'm en route as this podcast is being launched and played and listened to. And you know, I wanted to kind of go back to the well because you were actually a little bit in front of the curve. And I know the Seven Summits, of course, it's the seven highest mountains on each continent.
Right.
This is back in 2001. Yeah. And I wanted to get first defined if it was 2001 that you completed the seven, or was it going back 9 years or 8 years?
Right.
When this whole journey in your brain and, you know, right. What was the energy? What was the impetus behind, like, where did you get this idea?
Well, 2001 was Everest. That's when I summited Everest. And that made me the 58th person to climb the seven summits. So go back 8 years, 1993 is when I first tried one of them. Mount Elbrus was my first. You've been to Elbrus. Yeah. You've been to all of them, right? Yeah. Except Everest. So.
Yeah.
I first want to say I'm jealous of your journey because I wish I was going with you, but can't do it again. Well, I could, but not going this time. But yeah. So you start in 1993, and I had read the book. Have you read the book, Seven Summits, Dick Bass?
Yeah, I met Dick Bass.
Yeah, so there's some interesting stories there, but got to know Dick climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in 1994. He went with us. And so that gave me the inspiration to want to do the Seven Summits. And my mentor climber, Phil Urschler, said, you don't even know if you can go high. And that actually happened before 1994. But I read the book, got inspired, wanted to climb the seven summits, and I had only climbed Mount Rainier. And he said, you have to find out if you can go high, if your physiology will adapt. And so that's when the journey started, going to Mount Elbrus in 1993.
Yeah, incredible. You know, let's go back, and I want to touch on Dick Bass for a minute. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was very, very, very blessed and fortunate to be invited to an event that Steve Young, the former and now Hall of Fame quarterback for the 49ers, and he used to throw an event down there, and it was a charity event. And so I got invited with a number of other NFL players.
Yep.
And I go down there, and the first night, we end up at the main lodge there at Snowbird.
Yep.
Snowbird's the location that it's in, located in Utah, for those people that don't know, just outside of Salt Lake City. And Dick Bass, through his parents or himself or something, was involved in oil. He had purchased Snowbird Bird Resort.
Yeah, he owned Snowbird.
Yeah, he did. And so anyways, we go in there, and there's probably six of us sitting around, all former NFL players, and, you know, the wives, the girlfriends, and Dick comes up, and this is in the bar up top.
Yeah.
And so he sits down, and he starts getting into the story. And when he had started this whole journey, as you know, he had started with his best friend, Frank Wells.
That's
Frank
right.
Wells at the time was the CEO of Disney. And those two had gone around the world, and it was, I think it was right before Everest or something, that they had gone heli-skiing in Utah. And they had flown up on two different helicopters with their guides and everything else. Their wives were with them. They land, they ski, they have a great time. The clouds start coming in, so the guides say, hey, let's get out of here. So Dick jumps back into the same helicopter with Frank Wells. And right before they're gonna take off, Frank Wells' wife comes over, knocks on the door of the helicopter and says, you know, I'd really feel comfortable if I could fly down the mountain with my husband. Of course, Dick, being a great guy, goes, no problem. So he hops out, goes in, jumps in with his wife. As they're going down the hill, Frank Wells' helicopter crashes into the side of the mountain. Everybody in that helicopter died. And so this is now like a week or two after, and he's trying to come to grips on survivor's guilt on why him, why me.
Oh, yeah.
And he's sitting here, this big, gregarious guy, and he's sitting on the table with all these macho football players and the wives and girlfriends, and he's just got tears running down his face. And we were just blown away by it. Like, nobody knew what to say. Like, could you comfort a person like this?
Right. It's a true story, obviously.
Yeah.
And so that's tongue and groove with why I spent so much time with Dick. You know, I just read his book. I didn't know the man. And but I was inspired and set a goal to climb the seven summits. It was back in the early 90s. And I was pretty young at the time, around 30. And after that first Mount Elbrus experience, I learned that I did fine at altitude. And so the next year was Kilimanjaro, as I mentioned. And Phil Urschler, again, the great climber, Phil Urschler, the first American to climb Mount Everest up the North Face. He told me that that Dick had called and wanted to come along because Frank had recently died, and as you said, he had been the president at Disney, and Disney commissioned an artist to do a bust of Frank, and they were going to give the bust on an annual basis, still do, to the top executive of the year at the Disney Corporation. So Frank's idea, and Kilimanjaro was Frank's favorite mountain.
Yeah.
And as kind of a pilgrimage to Frank, Dick wanted to go back. And he wanted to get rocks from the top of Kilimanjaro to serve as the base of the bust for the award.
Wow.
And so I was able to spend, you know, a few weeks with Dick Bass, the first person ever to climb the seven summits. And it was all his idea.
Well, what a great
everything
experience.
We're talking about right now doesn't, it might have happened, but Dick Bass created this. And we got near the top, as you know, Mark. There's the top of Kilimanjaro, and then you go a little further to Uhuru Point, and that's the true summit. We were resting at the top before we went to the true summit, and I looked over, and Dick Bass was taking all my gear out of my pack, all of it, just shredding it out, throwing it in a pile.
I can see where this is going.
And he said, Johnny, he's a gregarious Texan, as Mark has said. He said, Johnny, I've already been to Uruhu Point. You haven't. Get going. And take your pack that is now empty and get me some rocks for the Frank Wells Award.
Yeah.
And I laughed. I said, okay. I picked up my pack. I started walking, and it's an annual award. So he goes, I'm thinking 8 to 10 years worth now. So I went and retrieved some good sized rocks from the top of Kilimanjaro for Frank Wells.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, I've been up on top there now twice. The last time 3 years ago with the NFL group, Chris Long. He's got a great organization called Water Boys. I was up there with other military veterans and NFL players, and it was complete chaos when we got up there. People went blind. Chris Long was disoriented, almost fell off the side. Moore had to pull him back. You know, it was crazy. But, you know, I think that, you know, the kind of the one theme, you know, so going back to Dick Bass, mm-hmm. big, gregarious, mm-hmm. goal setting,
yep.
pushing himself to the limit. Nobody at that time really knew. And I think their goal at the time was to try to do it in 1 year. You and I have been doing this now. Well, you did it, you know, what, 8 years?
8 years. It was an annual, it was my annual vacation.
Yeah.
Plan a climb 1 year at a time, go do it, get on to the next one the next year. 1 year because of work, I just wasn't able to do it. So yeah, it took 8 years.
Yeah. And I'm in the same boat. And in my case, Denali got pushed back, you know, minus 80, and that wasn't fun. So I had to go back again and do it. And this last year with COVID, right? So things happen.
Things happen.
Yeah.
And it happened to them too. They weren't able to, they wanted to do the 1 year thing, and they had it well planned out, but it just didn't work.
I think there's a theme here, and that is, you know, we're talking today about two guys. You know, I have not done it. I've been on two of the, well, I've done them six times, two of them twice, and now I'm about to take on this monster effort with not only Mount Everest, but also within 24 hours going up Lhotse. Mm-hmm. And then you've done these things, and a lot of people, and I'm very grateful for anybody listening right now of saying this. It's very complimentary, and I don't take it lightly. But they say to me, Mark, you're so inspiring. Hmm. And I don't see myself as inspiring because the only thing that did is it took courage for me to step into the fear, mm-hmm. right? And I'm wondering about for you, like, you know, so let's take that a step further. So for me, stepping into the fear, which I didn't know if I could do it. I didn't know if I couldn't do it.
Right.
But it was something I was uncomfortable with because I'd never been at, like you said, going to heights, going to elevation.
Yep.
You know, there's adventure tied to it because you're going to a foreign country. Your first mountain was Elbrus, which is the old USSR.
Yeah, Republic of Georgia down by the Black Sea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Serious adventure.
Yeah, it's a serious adventure. It's planes, trains, and automobiles just to get there. And so I think a lot of times when I hear from people about it's so inspiring, they're thinking about it in terms of they haven't moved or done something. Now, of course, not everybody has to go mountain climb to prove something. Of course not. Right. But something that's uncomfortable. And I think that's where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
And so for you, what was it that got you off the couch? Not, you've never been a lazy guy, but I'm not saying that like you weren't going to step into it, but you know, you wanted to go like test it, but I'm not sure if we got into it yet. What was that thing that you saw a picture? We both grew up in the great state of Washington. So there's Mount Rainier for me looking at that thing every day. My dad had climbed it. You know, I used to admire the Whitaker brothers, Lou and Jim, Ed Veesters. I mean, that was the playground that we grew up on. Right.
Yep.
So that inspired me a lot. And I knew a lot of guys like you had done it and that inspired me. For you, what was that?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's certainly a reason why the mountains have always served as the grand metaphor for goal setting. You know, it's tangible. Climb your mountain, Amelia's mountain. You know, find your summit, mm-hmm. because the summit exists. It's on any peak. That's we're going to go, and we're going to do our best to get to the top. So it's so tangible. And it's so easily related, I feel, to what we're trying to accomplish in our everyday lives. And so it's kind of what you're saying. What motivated you? What was the first step? The mountains are almost easier, aren't they, MP, in that you're going to go 29,032 feet.
Yeah.
And when you get there, you're going to know it because there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
in life's journeys and endeavors, we have to create the summits. We have to create the steps along the way, the base camps, the camp one, the camp two, the camp three of our journey. So I treated it, I was motivated by the seven summits, largely Dick Bass and then Phil Urschler and other climbers. Like you're saying, I just started to get to know all these climbers, climbing Rainier. And so I set that goal, but I treated it much like I have throughout my life of trying to define what the summit is. The mountains, again, they're easy. It's right there. It's the top of Mount Rainier. It's the top of Mount Elbrus. It's the top of Lhotse. But I just was motivated like I try to do with anything I take on and just kind of piece it together and determine, you know, when I get there.
So when we were talking about peak performances, some of the things that are your kind of hot points, okay, I'm going to throw some out there. Yeah. And I want to like go through them and see how you would frame these in terms of one step up the mountain, how you get there, how do you unpack it? So if anybody's out there today and they're listening and they're on the fence of whether or not to take on some mega challenge, mm-hmm. right? Whatever that might be. It might be just trying to make a picnic table. Right?
Sure.
It doesn't have to be Mount Everest.
Right.
Some of the hot points you've talked about in the past, visualization, preparing, executing, measuring, access, the team.
Right.
So my guess is like when you first start, and I'm relating this because this is what I had to do. And I've done this a lot with my college, my football career.
Right.
Literally laying in bed and picturing, you know, jumping up and catching the ball over, landing in the back of the end zone with no time left. And I did that as a little kid, and those things happened to me. I was, preparation meets opportunity. It wasn't luck, but they did happen. But it started with visualization. Where does that play in the kind of the hierarchy of attaining a goal that you've put out there as a big ass goal that you're going after?
Yep. Well, it's a big question. Visualization, I think, is critical because it's not dreaming. There's a distinction in my mind. Dreaming, that's not going to get you off the couch. In fact, you'll probably stay on the couch because it's a good place to dream.
Yeah.
Right? and you dream about, you know, all of us, you know, how could life be better? I want to be this. I want to get there. But it's a dream. It's not tangible. And it becomes frustrating. Visualization, I talk about working backwards. So what are we visualizing? The attainment. You know, you're going to make a picnic table. What's it look like in your mind? Okay. You're going to climb Mount Everest. See yourself on top of the world. And how did you get there? Well, now we got to work backwards. And we got to go back to the beginning. And like you said, we have to prepare. If it's a household deal or you want to start running 10Ks, well, you're not going to run a 10K tomorrow, right? You're going to run a quarter mile and walk a quarter mile and run a quarter mile. Have a plan. So it gets back to now, I absolutely have a distinct visualization of what I want to do. And it's also distinct from a dream in that it's possible. Like, I can't visualize catching a pass in the end zone on my back with time running out.
Yeah.
That's not a fair visualization. It's not going to happen. But so the visualization, your vision has to be reality, and then you start to prepare. And preparing, what will I need? If I'm going to run the 10K, you got to have some shoes, man. You got to have some good shoes, and you got to get outside. And so what's the plan going to be like? And I've talked about it a lot, climbing again, the great metaphor, because the next thing is team or support. You know, you might ask your husband or your wife or your son or your brother, will you run the 10K with me? Okay, now you're putting together a team. Someone's going to hold you accountable. Someone's going to make sure you're doing the things necessary that you don't get hurt. In climbing, you put together a team that will become so important to your success, including your life. So it takes on a dramatic emphasis and importance, but it's no different than that 10K or your first marathon or building a picnic table that you talked about?
So there's a buddy of ours, and for the life of me, I'm spacing on his name. He was actually on this podcast about 100 podcasts ago.
Right.
He's our guy that started Expedia and Zillow.
Oh, Rich Barton.
Rich Barton. Okay. Yeah. So Rich, when he was on the podcast and I was, and this is, you know, so Rich Barton is the founder of Expedia.
Yep.
But Expedia became Expedia before there was Expedia, before there was really online travel. I mean, it was just kind of on the peak. They birthed it out of Microsoft. He and Bill Gates, you know, founded it more or less together, and then off they went. And so I was asking him about, you know, when you come up with a concept like Expedia or even Zillow, like, where does that start? And he said, and then how do you get these amazing employees that you get? And he referred to it as a BHAG, right? Mm. Big, hairy, audacious goal.
Okay. Right?
And it's kind of very similar to what you're talking about right now,
yeah.
Which is about staying in. You gotta be a little bit uncomfortable because if you've never done something. So,
right.
So like for me, this is a good example. Like I would never be a champion triathlon guy because I'm not a great swimmer. I mean, I can swim, but I'm not a great swimmer.
Right.
So I'd just get passed and lapped and dunked and everything else. And,
right.
You know, I'd be doing a dog paddle and it's just not,
right.
I wasn't built for that.
Right.
And you said, just like for you, maybe you weren't the wide receiver. You're a great high school player. So, but there's other things that you're really good. So it's kind of what you're saying is find your lane.
Yeah.
And then having something that's so far up on the chart that, you know, it takes your mind, you got to stretch, you got to go right in that direction.
Right. Right. It is, you know, charging into the fear within that vision of reality, but you do want your goals to stretch almost through your own reality because you haven't been there yet, but you do believe that with preparation and associating with the right team members, and holding on to that vision, that step by step, and again, mountains being a great metaphor, it truly is one step in front of the other, and then you're done. So you started this part of the conversation, you know, how do you get people, you know, perhaps off the couch to do something? You know, it sounds simple, but just you got to get started.
Yeah. I say all the time, action creates reaction. And a lot of times that action, you may find yourself doing something you don't like and it sucks. That's a good indicator because you know you're not going to go down that lane.
Yep.
And you got to keep moving. That's the big thing. And just like the metaphor you're talking about in mountains, like there's always obstacles come up. I mean, I know there's obstacles that came in your way in all these over these 8 years. But the bottom line is you can't stop. You can't, you know, sink down. You got to keep moving. One of the things you brought up twice now is this word team. And, you know, I was bred and raised, you know, in a team atmosphere. I didn't play a solo sport like tennis or golf.
Right.
I was on a football team. That's what I did. One of the things that I know for me is you know, from, you know, you also mentioned this, your spouse, as an example, or it could be your best friend. It could be a coworker. It could be, you know, so many different things, but you can't have negative weight on your back to accomplish great things.
That's right.
So the characteristics, when you start boiling down in terms of a teammate, what do you look for? What do you think in terms of, and again, this could be, you know, in your workplace, this could be for an athletic goal, this could be for a relationship, but where do you see that?
Hands down, the attribute of a can-do positive attitude. I'll take that anywhere.
Yeah.
If it's a person on my rope or on my climbing team, that person that wakes up with a, how are we going to get this done today, and happy about it and motivating, I absolutely think that's the most important characteristic in someone that you want to associate yourself with. And what you're really asking with your team members, you got to give in the same can-do attitude, I believe. But what you're asking of them is, hey, we have a common goal, or we're supporting each other's goals. That positive attitude, I find it's contagious, right? It's infectious. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, this person brings it every day. And that's what it takes. And what I know a lot of the guys that you're going with to Everest, Mark, and you'll see there, it's a long slog. You know, you're going to be on a mountain for a couple of months.
Yeah.
And every day, even down days, meaning you're resting at base camp for 3 or 4 days, getting your body acclimatized. And as you opened your podcast, you'll climb as high as, you know, 24,000 feet several times. So you're doing laps on the mountain to acclimatize and set the mountain up and get your gear up there and get all those camps set. It's not glamorous. And to keep your head in the game, that's the key. And to associate with positive people, solution-oriented people, because you mentioned it and you framed the question, you're going to run into obstacles every day, and there's no way for us to tell you what they're going to be because we don't know and you don't know.
Yeah.
So that's the characteristic that I think of all successful people, from business to other activities and pursuits, and certainly mountain climbing, that's the one.
There's a common friend of ours, a guy that I actually went to high school with, college with, and we both went into the NFL, Hugh Millen. He was on the podcast, like podcast 3, you know, way back when.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny because I remember when my daughter now is 24 years old, Claudette, who you know, and he was talking to her and he gets down and he posed this riddle, and I can't remember exactly how it went, but it went something like this. He's like, Claudette, what's the one thing that you weren't born with, but the one thing that you can control? And that answer, and she was, you know, like, you could see the wheel spinning.
Sure.
But the answer was attitude.
Yeah.
Right? And the attitude of gratitude, the attitude of positivity, the attitude of can do, all those things that you just mentioned, you know, they become contagious.
They do.
Right?
It's real. It's real when you get into the extreme. And again, we can define extreme in any walk of life on any mountain. But when things get extreme in our lives, if we can find that, I love the term can do. That can-do attitude, like no matter what is thrown at you, like we just said, you don't know what's coming. I can't wait to hear your stories because you're going to find out. Yeah. But if you hit it with that positive attitude of like, oh, I will figure this out. And when you act like that, your teammates are watching you and they will act the same.
Yeah. And you know, another thing I want to add on to that, and you're going to totally relate to this,
yeah,
which is there's a little secret. And that little secret is hard things are hard, right? They're not easy. That's the reason why they're extreme and they're difficult and they're challenging. But when you get to the other side, there's this such a sense of accomplishment that you've done it, that you've made. I saw these this little video today, and here in Idaho, which we both sit, there are 9 12,000 peaks. And so for some people, their goal is to climb all 9 12,000 peaks.
Sure.
And some of the people that I saw in these videos are not the most athletic and they weren't born to climb. You know, somebody was from East Africa. He'd never even been on a mountain before. But, you know, to see that sense of accomplishment and with that, like all of a sudden their wings, yep, to take flight, their chest comes out a little bit, the sparkle in their eye. It's just all those things. Again, going back to what you said earlier about that the mountains being metaphorical of so much more in life that, yep, can be accomplished than just the actual mountain.
Absolutely. You bet. Mountains will always service that. You know, you made me think of something that was, I think about it all the time. My greatest takeaway, I had no idea it was going to be my greatest takeaway from Everest. But what it was is, you know, I flew out of Seattle, so SeaTac. And the moment, as you know, for a climbing expedition, once you start packing, you're just packing and unpacking continuously. If you're not sleeping, you're unpacking and packing and,
yeah,
rearranging and,
yeah,
doing,
yeah.
So you're busy, but you go to SeaTac or wherever you're flying out of. And I want you to think about this, because when you go, you're going to have about 8, just like you do today. And all your listeners have so many balls in the air, right? Juggling all kinds of things going on. You've got your family and you got your career and you've got your home and boom, boom, boom. It's just all these balls. And what I noticed over time, when you focus on a goal, a challenge, what slowly starts to happen is the balls go away and you're left throwing up one ball, that one goal, throwing it up, catching it, throwing it up, catching it, and you achieve your goal, and more balls are going to come back in your life. That's inevitable.
Yeah.
But that takeaway for me was something I could apply throughout my life since then. And that was, okay, I need to get this done. Get all the other balls in the air out of my focus, out of my mind, take care of that one, and then move on. And it makes things more manageable, not so stressful. So that was my greatest observation.
Yeah. Every single time I've been on these expeditions, I always am absolutely sure I'm going to get fired. And at the end of the day, though, I never do. Right.
Right.
And I come back and everything's fine and off right. you go. And I think to your point, those things that you thought were important really aren't that important. And, you know, especially with a goal like this, it becomes such a central part of the drive to make it and accomplish it, that when you're distracted by things that really don't matter at the end of the day, they don't matter.
Well, and what you also learn, like, no, you didn't get fired. Your family was okay because you've done a good job with those things.
Yeah.
And then you turned your attention onto another goal and you take care of it. You come back and that's all waiting for you and it needs your attention, certainly.
The last thing I want to, again, another one of your hot points that I just want to briefly, and you've been like dipping in and out of this word all along this journey here, is preparing. So, mm-hmm. you know, I always like to talk about preparation means opportunity. And so, you know, up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down the mountain I go most days. And, yeah. and you're just trying to, like, you know, build reps, build altitude, build red blood cells here yep. at 6,000 feet.
Yep.
But again, when you take that and you transition that over into business, you got your MBA, MBA at Whitman?
MBA, undergrad Whitman, MBA at UW.
UW, I'm sorry, University of Washington. But, you know, you've been in the business world and you're currently, you know, you've been with a successful private equity firm for a number of years. And again, when you're talking about people, because the one thing is, like, when you do all these things on the other end, there's never certainty. Mm-hmm. So X doesn't always equal Y,
right?
And just because I'm preparing every day doesn't mean I'm going to summit. It's
right.
just the way it is.
Right.
Just because I put a zillion hours in the weight room way back when, you know, when I first got to the University of Washington, had no bearing on if I'd ever start a game, right?
That's right.
But when preparation meets opportunity, great things can happen.
Right.
And what's your view on like in business, like how do you tie all that together?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Preparation meets opportunity. That's right. Like when you got out of the weight room from the UW and graduated and you had your opportunity with the Raiders, one thing that you did know was if you weren't in the weight room and you weren't putting in the reps and you weren't getting your body and mind in shape to go for your tryout with the Raiders, one thing you did know is it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So preparation means I need to take care of everything in my control. So you're now getting ready to go climb Everest. I watch you. I know what you're doing. You're doing your part. If you just kind of show up there, and people do, believe it or not, they're not completely fit. Oh. They haven't done a good job of selecting their teammates. These are the problems that are happening. These are the problems on Everest and other Himalayan peaks and, you know, the past 10 years, because it's become more popular and accessible to get into these types of places. So the people that aren't, it goes back to visualization and that type of thing. If I do make it to the top, what do I need to do to be in that position? And you're doing all of those things. Have to be in perfect shape, as good a shape as you possibly can get in. You have to have chosen a very good team. You have to be on time. You know, what you'll see, Everest is a very interesting time frame, isn't it? You're going to go at the end of this month, and you're going to start to prepare your body for altitude, your camps, as I mentioned, and fixing, you know, rope into the mountain along with the other teams that are there. All, and again, working backwards from your goal, early May, the jet stream is going to move about 200 miles to the north. It's not climbable right now. You couldn't get to the top of Mount Everest right now. Once that jet stream moves, and it only moves for 2 or 3 weeks, and then it comes back with the monsoon, brings it back in, or the jet stream brings the monsoon in. Mm-hmm. So you talk about preparation. You have to be precise. Again, a great metaphor at Mount Everest. All of your fitness has to be accomplished. All of your camps need to be put in place. the rope has to, the mountain needs to be secured with rope for safety. And so it's taking care of everything that you know is required to take care of and getting it done. That's preparation. Then the intangibles come in and you deal with them.
And at the end of the day, again, you know, what you just talked about is focusing on what I'm about to take on. But even if those things don't happen, like say I do everything right, I'm still a better person if those all the things don't happen in the right sequence and it doesn't end up in my end goal.
Right.
I've bettered my body. I've bettered my mind. I've bettered my education about what I'm in for.
Yep.
I'm a better person, right? Yep. These things are character building. I mean, there's all those other intangibles also that kind of fit into this bucket that you can take with you in life as you go forward.
Right.
Don't you think?
Absolutely. No, it's the, that's going full circle to the metaphor. It's enjoying the journey and benefiting from the journey. Because you're on it. You've been on the journey for years.
Yeah.
No, you know, people think, oh, you're going to go to climb Mount Everest. When's your flight? 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah. I leave March 30th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got a month. You've been climbing Everest for years. In all the other mountains you climbed, you were preparing for Everest. All your training, preparing for Everest, the highest peak in the world. And that has served you well, regardless if Everest ever happens or not. You're right. All that prep, experiences with friends that you work out with, climbers that have taught you things. Yeah, you're definitely a better person for the journey and preparing are synonymous.
Yeah, and you know, look, I this is to anybody that's listening, and I've talked about this before, but you know, John Wooden's got this great thing about competitive greatness, right? Mm-hmm. And when you go through all the rungs of the pyramid of success that he had created, you know, at the end of the day, and there's like 25 rungs in there, building blocks that get you to that top pinnacle point, the championship, the top of Everest,
yep,
the top of business, whatever you're doing, some 10K, you know, it doesn't matter, but you'll never get anywhere if you don't love the process. And competitive greatness, you can put an equal sign right next to that. And it's really about loving the process,
that's
period.
It.
And if you love your craft, despite, I haven't made a penny on any of this, right? So I'm spending a lot of money. I'm doing these things. I do it for the love of the game. And I would have done the same thing when I was playing football, right? It's not all glory. I went through way more painful years than successful moments. I can right. promise everybody that.
Right. You're absolutely right. You know, when we started the chat today on the podcast, MP, I said I was jealous. You know, I loved the journey of climbing the seven summits. And I'm surprised I didn't, you know, 10 years ago, start over and do it again. I know I would have enjoyed it, but again, other goals in life, business and family and that type of thing. But yeah, loving that process. I loved it. And it never had anything to do with the summit. And like you, I've spoke hundreds of times and never charged a dime. You know, if people wanted to hear about the journey, I was happy to tell it because I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes.
So let's do a slight pivot.
Okay.
And because you have been on the top of the world, I have not. And I want you to help the listener and me and kind of give me a sense of what I'm in for.
Yeah.
Right. I'm landing now in Kathmandu, right? Probably is this thing, this podcast is being released.
Yeah.
And it give us a visualization of what this journey is going to be like from kind of ground zero to the top of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's an amazing journey. If you looked at your itinerary, kind of planned itinerary, it would look very long. It goes fast. As I already mentioned about juggling balls, you'll get very focused very quickly. When I was on the plane to Kathmandu, I was visualizing and thinking about it. And I was also nervous.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk for years about this Seven Summits goal and I and you have climbed a lot of different mountains, not, you know, exclusive of the Seven Summits, but when you do all this and your seventh mountain is going to be Everest, my seventh mountain was Everest. It's not a coincidence, people. it's a completely different ball game than anything that we had climbed up to that point. And mainly that is everything becomes more serious. And I remember thinking on the plane, I made a plan with myself. I said, forget about the name. It's over. We're going to go climb a mountain and we're going to work. We're going to do our best every day. And it's going to take a couple of months. So I just forgot about Everest. I said, I'm not calling it that anymore. I'm just going to just do my job. I'm going to be helpful to my teammates. And one thing you think about a lot is staying healthy. And that becomes the key, because when you get on that plane, Mark Pattison, I know, is healthy, prepared, fit. And now it becomes that, and now that's over. You're done getting in shape. It's preservation. And so really, you know, and it's been a difficult year for everybody around the world in the pandemic, and we all think about health, and it's good that there'll be an emphasis on that from everybody you encounter, from airports to faraway villages and that type of thing, because just, you just don't want to get anything. Mm-hmm. So that's a prevailing deal throughout. So it's about taking care of yourself. And that's with any endeavor. You know, once you feel prepared, now it's time to take care of yourself and execute. And so in our expedition, we had a group of trekkers that went as far as base camp. I know you're doing the same. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it then. I don't know if you do, Mark, but it was so comforting because they're going to base camp. They're going to 17,600 feet.
They're having a great time.
They're all fit people. They're your friends. They're having a great time.
Yep.
And so it's really interesting, everybody. You have the climbing team, and that might be, you know, in our case, it was five of us. We weren't with our Sherpas yet. So five of us and 12 or 13 trekkers, and they kept it light. The climbers are thinking, oh boy, here we go. How do I feel? How do I feel? How's it going? But they kept it light. And I remember they came, so it's about 10 days or so into base camp, depending. And you're going slow. You're acclimatizing now. Your body's getting ready, as you mentioned. You're building red blood cells.
Now we're starting and we're going up to 17,500.
Yeah. Yep. And that's high. And so your body's starting to prepare. And then when we got to base camp, all the trekkers were able to spend the night there one night. And I remember they were walking out of base camp, and I probably literally started to cry.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's your lifeline.
My lifeline's leaving.
Yeah.
And then it was our team, our climbing team and our Sherpa team, one team. And it was the tears were like, it wasn't so much because I was going to miss them, because I was going to see them when I got home, but it was the game just changed.
Yeah.
And now you're looking up and base camp, for those of you that haven't seen that, perhaps base camp is right at the base of the Khumbu Icefall. So you're looking at a very daunting first segment of climbing. That's where you start. So then you get into it, and you'll start just to get very comfortable with a cadence. You're going to go up to camp one through the icefall. You're going to come back down, spend a couple nights. You're going to go back up to camp one, spend a couple nights. All of this is to carry loads with your Sherpas to those camps, but also to acclimatize. So as we mentioned, if you could see my finger through the podcast, you know, you're going up and down, up and down, up and down, all the way down, up, 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 down, 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 you know, spending the night at certain camps to get your body ready. Then what happens is the mountain is ready. It's fixed. That's a slang term for ropes are fixed into the mountain for the climbers to latch onto. Every camp, camp one, camp two, camp three, camp four, are secured. And unlike camping, which many of you people do, and so do I, you move your camp after a day, these camps stay there. So you've got, you know, Mark's going to go to Everest with five sleeping bags. And so every camp is fully equipped: food, first aid, stoves, your sleeping bags, fully functional for safety and sleep. Finally, by the end of April, you'll be ready. So you'll go back down to base camp to rest, eat, hydrate, and wait for about a 7-day weather window. And what's really interesting, getting back to team, and I'm sorry for moving around a little bit, but another fascinating takeaway for me was, I don't know how many teams will be there this year. It's going to be somewhat reduced, probably around as many as there were back when I climbed it. But teams from around the world come together. Not one of those teams came to Mount Everest capable of climbing it. Now you think about that. What do I mean? They don't have enough rope. They don't have enough equipment to fix the rope. They don't have it. So what happens is you all of a sudden become a big company together, all teammates from around the world. And you have meetings at base camp and you determine how much rope do you have? Team from Argentina. How about you guys from India? How about you guys from the United States? Okay, great. Boom, boom, boom. And you devise a plan to get this mountain ready for everybody, which is, it struck me, you know, no teamwork, no climbing. And so that was fascinating to me. At the end of the day, you have meetings down at base camp when that mountain is ready and your body's ready. And you're looking at weather reports from throughout, you know, tens of them from throughout everywhere in the world, trying to get a feel for that weather window. And then you can't have everybody going at once. And so you make a plan.
Like we saw in 2019.
Like we saw in 2019. I'm happy for you. I'm not happy at the circumstances that have made it that it's a reduced number on Everest this year, but the mountain will be safer and more manageable. And I think the camaraderie and the teamwork will be easier to facilitate.
Yeah, I'm told actually that 150 people, climbers, are signed up right now, as opposed to 350 in 2019. It's a big number.
It's the 2019 was not tenable. So the 350 is not tenable. And they have to get a hold of that. You know, Mother Nature, what have you, made the decisions for them for this year, but they very simply have to limit permits going forward. But that's another discussion. So back to your point, when it's go time, now you're going. Base camp, camp one, spend the night. Camp two, spend the night. Camp three, spend the night. Then you're going to camp four, also called the South Call or High Camp. There you're going to get there at about 3 p.m, 2, and you're going to rest. Maybe try some supplemental oxygen, depending, we can get into that if you have time or you want to talk about that, and hydrate, and you're going to take off that night. Our year, it was a perfect, I have pictures, Mark, you've seen my pictures. That night was a perfect night to try to climb to the summit from 26,000 to 29. Our lead climber decided we would take a day off at the South Call to rest. The next day was a storm. And it was a missed opportunity. A couple of us did make it the next day. But what that summit day is like, to complete your question, it goes back to being prepared. You're on autopilot. You're doing what you've been trained to do, what you know how to do, and you're in the most dramatic, drastic environmental conditions on the world, on the planet, and so you're really just trying to stay safe, get it done, take care of your climbing partners that are still climbing, and then get to the top and try to get down alive. It's a tough day. We were 19 hours in a storm. Took us 12 hours from 26,000 feet to get to the top and 7 hours to get back down to 26,000 feet.
That's a long day, man.
That's a long day.
That's a long day. Well, look, I think at the end of the day, and what, 20 years later, mm-hmm. you sit here with this very vivid memory, yep. and this keepsake that yep. you can hang on your mantle, you know, for the rest of your life.
Right.
And I think, again, going back to, you know, I would ask anybody listening, what's your Everest?
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
What's your Everest? And it doesn't have to be Everest. It could be something that you're thinking about. It could be a relationship. It could be a business move you've been thinking about, but going back to the BHAG, a big stretch, being prepared, mm-hmm. having the right team members, getting to the top, visualizing, all these things that you talked about today, they all matter at the end of the day towards accomplishing that big goal that you set for yourself, and then being able to measure it, experience it, go through all the heartache of it, and then come back and talk about it.
Right. And it's a really good point, and perhaps a motivator for all of us to keep finding our Everest. Because once you've climbed Mount Everest, you know, I climbed it 20 years ago this May 25th. Another great takeaway that I didn't expect was I have not had one day since then that in some form or some capacity, I didn't think about it. I didn't know the lasting effect it would have. I never contemplated that. I never thought about it. But the point is we have to set our goals, visualize success, then do what's important to preparing and accomplish that. And should we accomplish it, that does stay with you. And like you said, it doesn't have to be a mountain. It can be anything. And then keep doing it. Just keep doing the next thing. And it's additive, and it fuels the next opportunities that you're trying to accomplish.
I think it does, man. I mean, look, I went through a rough time. That's what got me in the mountains. And it's been this chain reaction domino effect of not only climbing, but then being introduced to podcasting and then being introduced to charity work and paying it forward and doing things like that. And if I hadn't stepped into the fear, I would have never have realized these amazing gifts that have been given to me. And for that, I'm eternally grateful for. So listen, man, you have been an absolute pleasure, dream. I know we've been trying to rack this up for a long time.
It's fun.
And I think at the end of the day, you know, timing is everything. And to try to give me a little ounce of juice into the tank, you know, as I'm in that moment, you know, and I, one of the things that you talked about that I can really identify with was that before every game, you know, in college, Michigan, LSU, USC, Stanford, all these, you know, big name, programs, I'd always have these butterflies. Every mountain I've been on, Denali, Everest, I look up at that thing, I go, holy smokes, Rainier, that thing's right at the front door.
Yep.
I get butterflies, man. And that's a good sign.
Yes.
Right. Because it really starts to lock in your concentration on what needs to happen to be successful. So for that, thank you so much for being on the show.
It was my pleasure. And my final comment to you, Mark, is enjoy the journey that you're enjoying the journey you're on, and you have a great perspective that it doesn't start and stop. You're going to work right through it to accomplishment, and it will stay with you. And enjoy it. It's a very meaningful, wonderful place. You're going to meet a lot of, you're still on your journey and meet a lot of great people associated with your goal. And so I wish you health, happiness, success, and look forward to your podcast. I'll sit in that chair and I'll do a podcast on you when you get back.
Yeah,
I'll ask the questions.
Yeah, we'll flip it around. Listen, I so appreciate it. It was awesome. There is the one, the only John Wechter. Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
It never happens at a good time. The pipe bursts at midnight. The heater quits on the coldest night. Suddenly, you're overwhelmed. That's when Home Service here. For $4.99 a month, you're never alone. Just call their 24/7 hotline and a local pro is on the way. Trusted by millions, Home Serve delivers peace of mind when you need it most. For plans starting at just $4.99 a month, go to homeserve.com. That's homeserve.com. Not available everywhere. Most plans range between $4.99 to $11.99 a month your first year. Terms apply on covered repairs.